I want to start with a small apology, because I realized that a convention I've been using is a little odd once you start doing computations. It's a sine, so it's nothing that you probably would notice, but if you're doing computation, it's better to use this sine over here with a minus. And the reason is that because d and delta anti-commute, then with this convention, one finds that if I write, for example, the density equal L times a volume form, d of the volume form is the equations of motion plus the associated, there is a sign swap here, which is a little odd, but that's how it works. And this is why one should put a minus. The relationship between theta and theta is this one. Okay. So this is just a small remark. I'll try to be consistent in the future. Now, recapping what we did last time, we introduced symmetries and looked at Noether-Forth's theorem, which I will use again today. So it's good to recap here. So what is a symmetry? As usual, we have rho, a map from a Lie algebra to vector fields over field space, which is a Lie algebra homomorphism. And we say it's a Lagrangian symmetry. If the variation of the Lagrangian along the flow of this action, of this vector field, is a boundary term. So in here the slogan is invariance up to boundary. Next, we saw that by introducing omega as the variation of theta, which is a top minus 1, 2 form, we can formulate, Noether theorems as the following set of statements. Omega is conserved on shell, which means that omega final minus omega initial is equal to the integral over b of omega. So this is in the general situation where you have a time-like boundary. So sigma in, sigma final, m is in the middle, and b is the time-like boundary. Then, so if sigma has no boundary, this term is zero. Okay, next, the next step was to show that one can define a conserved current which is zero. So where J is by definition I rho psi theta minus R. So this boundary term here shows up in the Noether current. So here, again, I flipped the sign because I flipped my signs over there. So now this is a bit more consistent with with the results we will get today. So, but is a mathematical convention. There was no physical content in that sign. Okay, so in fact, this result can be phrased a little bit more more accurately or more, which is the following. So, in fact, dj, what it is equal to is delta xi phi I times the equations of motion. So you can see that this, of course, being proportional to the equations of motion, is zero on shell. But this is the way we will need this theorem today. Okay. So this was another one. Finally, we worked a little harder to find to prove a formula that emphasizes when and if J can be understood also as a sort of momentum map, a Hamilton, a generator of the flow with respect to the covariance symplectic form over there. So the result, of course, here we can write something similar. This is also useful later, so we'll write it. Q in integral over B of J of Xi, which is zero if. Okay, so finally, the last piece of this recap is this formula equal to and now let me write it like this, which is, I don't think I used this notation last time, but I break down into pieces what this object is. So this object is can be, for example, calculated in this way. This is just a simple identity. You could also say that S is defined by its left-hand side here. So this is equal to I rho xi omega minus d j plus this. And this is also equivalent to L rho xi theta minus delta r of xi. This is a little bit more handy because the Lagrangian gives you theta and r, so you don't have to go and compute omega, for example. You just do it at this level. You can do the computation here. So what is this object? This object is the obstruction for J to look like a momentum map, right? So this is obstruction for J to look like a momentum map. It's not technically a momentum map because omega is not technically a symplectic structure and so on and so forth. But if this wasn't there, then this equation would look like the Hamiltonian flow for the symmetric psi. And in particular, we would find one by integrating these things and going on shell and so on. Now, the theorem says that S of Xi on shell is exact. So this obstruction on shell is a boundary term. And this is what we proved last time. Obstruction is a boundary term. So just to keep track of things, by boundary here, one means, since here everything is a top minus one form, this is a top minus two. So R psi is, well, this R is a linear map top minus 2 1 forms. So top minus 2, maybe I could have called it corner instead. Because just to emphasize that you don't integrate it on the boundary of spacetime, but on the boundary of the boundary. It's a two-dimensional cell. Okay, so a corollary of this theorem is that we can integrate this equation over here. Integrate star over what? Over sigma in M. And what one finds is, well, one can state the theorem. Well, there are two equations that one can extract, one on shell, one off shell. And then one could also separate cases when sigma is, has a boundary and doesn't have a boundary. So in total, there are four interesting subcases of these of this situation of different generality. I would say the most important one is the following. When sigma has no boundary, we find omega sigma on shell is minus delta q sigma xi. So of course this is important because this way the corner term is not there. And we see that we get always on shell a Hamiltonian flow equation. So here what is important to remember, recall, F on shell with omega sigma is the covariant phase space. And so there is here no obstruction. And what we find is that in the absence of corners, at least, the neutral charge generates the symmetry in the covariant phase space. In absence of corners, neutral charge generates the symmetry in the covariant phase space. And this is a non-shell statement, of course. Okay. If there are corners, there can be corner obstructions. In fact, we will also see that there are corner ambiguities. One thing I have not proved but stated is also that in this case, you see why this is so powerful, because we have that under this hypothesis, not only this is true, but omega is independent of sigma, q is independent of sigma, and in fact, both quantities are completely unambiguous once I give you a Lagrangian up to boundary terms. So I will come back to these later. So let me write it in this box. On top of this, if sigma has no boundary, omega sigma q sigma independent of sigma, and both of them completely unambiguous, only determined unambiguously determined by by the class of the Lagrangian up to boundary terms. Okay. I will come back to the last statement later. So we see that this covariant phase space is then really independent. Sigma, we need it to compute the objects, but in the end, we can choose whichever Cauchy surface we like, as long as there are no corners, there is no ambiguity. Okay, now I want to push farther if there are no questions on the recap. No? Well, maybe let's do an example. The example that I didn't have the time to do last time, we'll do it now a little quickly. So we start from space-time translations, well, space-time symmetries of a scalar field. So we start with the Lagrangian
minus
1/2. Well, let's write the scalar Lagrangian. We have this.
So it's just, we can take the massless one for simplicity, but it doesn't really matter. We could add a mass term, wouldn't change anything. It's just
more terms to keep track of. And then we need the symmetry. The symmetry, we want space-time translations. So this is chi A dA phi. What is a space-time translation in absolute terms? It's not any diffeomorphism. We are in R4, we can do translations and maybe rotations or and so on, boosts, but we can't do arbitrary diffeomorphisms. These wouldn't be symmetries of the theory. So the condition is that no matter in which coordinate we write our metric, could be even a flat metric, but written in arbitrary coordinate, we want chi to be a Killing vector field. These are the global symmetries of our space. Okay, so if we are in Minkowski, in particular, we have 10 of them for 6 Lorentz transformation and translations. Okay. Of course, this is the same as the Killing equation written like this, which is something that will turn out to be crucial for the computations, which I invite you to do. Now, I will just go a little fast. From here, we get this as this symplectic potential current. So it's basically, you see delta phi partial p, so this is like phi dot, so it's a bit like pdq once we go on a surface, because this gets integrated with, contracted with the normal to the surface, and this is the derivative in the time direction with respect to that foliation. So this is expected, and the equations of motion are, of course, simply box phi. Okay. Now, what we want to do is to consider to see what these symmetries are. Last time, the symmetries that we consider were special in the way that they left the Lagrangian density completely invariant. This is not the case here. If you do the computation, you vary this Lagrangian, you will get some boundary terms. And you also, anyway. You also see that you will need the Killing equation to make this work.
killing, and this gives us let me write it like this, db or da r a chi with r a chi equal to, where did I write it? Here, minus 1/2 chi a db phi square. Well, let's write it like this. Maybe it's a little bit clearer. So in fact, this is nothing else than minus 1/2 chi a times the Lagrangian. This is not a coincidence. Okay. No, without, sorry, without the minus one. Yes. Okay, yeah. Okay, now we have all the ingredients to compute J. The important thing is that this is different from zero. It's even different from zero on shell, so that it's really there. And we compute J. How? Well, we take theta, we contract it with the symmetry, which means that we evaluate this on our symmetry here. Then we subtract r, and we work not too hard this time, and we find the following, where TBA is the stress energy tensor. So we are happy because we recover the expected result. TB phi TA phi plus 1/2 delta AB phi square. This is the stress energy tensor. So this is the expected result, right? So the generator of space-time translations, this is what we're going after, is given by momenta, right? So this is the momentum flux in your theory. So we found these results a few months ago in classical physics by more elementary means. But in the end, the computation is basically the same. Now, what I want to look at is whether we do have indeed a generator. Then, so let me look at the case d sigma equal. We can look at this S. That S over there, this obstruction, and this obstruction takes the following form. Here we need to work a little bit harder, but we use this formula, minus delta R dot dot dot,
and we find
minus delta phi box phi
chi A,
which is the equations of motion,
plus
minus db 2 chi b da phi delta phi. Okay, so this is this vanishes on shell, and this piece, in fact, I call let me put the minus inside just to make it a bit easier. Here, I call this RBA of chi. And we see that this is that boundary term over there. So here one has to use again the killing equation, where R is the boundary term. So we see that SA of chi becomes on shell DB of RBA with this with this being anti-symmetric, this is indeed an equation like that one. It's just written in tensor language. This is a top minus two form since it's anti-symmetric. So we see here, we see that indeed it the bulk part vanishes on shell as expected, and there is a corner term. So for forgetting about the corner term for now, we look at the equation, at the flow equation, and we find that this is delta Q sigma of chi, and this is what? This is nothing else than the integral over sigma of chi b and a tba. So is the is the momentum in the direction chi. Plus, we have this this bulk. Off-shell bulk obstruction, which is in a way is not truly an obstruction, but I want to look at it in the face for a second. So this is d phi. So why I'm interested in this? Well, in GR we will see a similar object, but which will have more important consequences. So of course this term vanishes on shell. So that's a good news, as expected. There's nothing not working over here. You are in the same situation as in that box. However, the reason why I want to stop here for a second is the fact that off shell we do not have a flow equation. Should we expect one? So let's suppose that we are in Minkowski, and here we have a flat slice, right? So this is the t equals zero, so this is R4. This is the t equals zero slice. Now, if I'm looking at, this is n. So in this situation, n chi would be the time translation component of the symmetry. So in particular, if I look at, there are two different cases that apply. One is chi a proportional to dt, and one is chi a space-like. Well, right. Let's say in the direction I. I think it should make sense, the notation. So in this case, we have an off-shell translation symmetry. And in a way, since we are off-shell, everything here will depend on sigma. Our omega depends on sigma, q depends on sigma, and so on. So, but we are choosing also a vector field that is adapted to the choice of my surface, and indeed is a symmetry of that hypersurface. And so it does make sense that we get an off-shell flow equation. So off-shell flow equation. We will not get it in this case. Now, notice that here we took t equals zero, but we could have also boosted this thing. And then the t that matters is the one adapted to that foliation. So there is really a sigma dependence in a statement like this. It depends on how we choose our surface. And even more, so suppose I choose a wobbly hypersurface, then there is no Killing vector field that is tangent to it. So there will be no off-shell flow equation. And finally, there is never an off-shell flow equation for something time-like, because no matter how we choose sigma, it will be space-like. And therefore, if chi has a time component, no matter where it's pointing, so if this is, sorry, no, not if it has a time component, that is a coordinate-dependent state. But if it is time-like, it will never be tangent to a space-like sigma. And so there's no way of choosing a sigma for which this a time-like Killing vector field is an off-shell generator of the symmetry. So this should resonate with the tutorials that we did, where time translations, where dynamics was recoded as a time translation symmetry. And so in a way, we see that time translation symmetry has like a particular status in this business, especially when we want to work off shell. Working off shell is much easier, and we will see in gauge theories it is much, much easier to work off shell, and so often what one does is to quantize off shell and then try to implement the equation of motion later. So this is more of a remark, in fact, for the future. But the point is, time-like chi is never a. So here the depends on sigma, on choice of sigma, and here time-like is never an off-shell symmetry. Like an off-shell has never an off-shell generator. And the reason is that it's about dynamics in a way. So it shouldn't happen that it has an off-shell generator. Okay, so this was a bit longer than I expected, but I hope it clarifies all these differences a little bit between on-shell, off-shell, and what we can expect even from a symmetry when we do this type of computations. Questions? By the way, the corner term, if there was one, it would have a similar structure, but now it would be there if chi is transverse to the corner, not to the hypersurface, but to the corner. But it if you look at it, it has, for very similar reasons, you will have chi contracted with this time-like normal or the space-like normal to your boundary. So. Okay. So it's time to look at local symmetries. So what is a local symmetry? So notation for local symmetry, I will change notation to a capital letter just to make sure that we know what we're talking about. But all the results we proved are still valid. So this is just a notation. So what is G typically? But not always. G will be the space of functions of into Lie algebra. This is the case of Yang-Mills theory, for example. But for GR, G. So these are the two main examples that we care about are vector fields. So this is the Lie algebra of diffeomorphism. Symmetry. Okay, these are the two main examples we're interested in. So where this is finite dimensional. Now, this is a nomenclature thing, definition. So you see here you can choose the gauge parameter locally. There is a local freedom in how you choose your gauge parameter. It's not, whereas, for example, here for a Killing vector field, you can't choose it locally. Even though it's a local quantity, it's a rigid quantity. Once you fix it in one point, you decide, oh, I want to here to take delta t, then it's delta t everywhere. You can't tweak it. It's a global symmetry, whereas here we are looking really at quantities that can be chosen locally. So psi in G can be freely chosen locally. I mean, I can, at every x, I can make a different choice. Remark, Killing vector fields are a subgroup, are a subalgebra, are a global subalgebra of does it make sense, this statement? As a subalgebra per se, I can't tweak it locally. It's part of a bigger group, of a bigger algebra that is, I can take a vector field, change it a little bit here, leaving it unchanged everywhere else. But if it's a Killing, I can't do that because otherwise it would violate my equation over there. Okay, so this is an example to keep in mind. Okay, so now I call a local gauge, a local symmetry gauge, if this off-shell obstruction is equal to zero. This is the off-shell obstruction. So this is by no means a definition you will find in the literature. It's me who came up with it. But I think it will tell us that Young-Mills symmetries are gauge symmetries in a very bland sense, whereas diffeomorphisms are not. So these are internal symmetries that do not mess up with how we foliate spacetime. That term is not there. It's just not there. Whereas for GR, of course, there is an interplay between how we foliate spacetime and what kind of symmetries we get. Okay. With this, we can move on. And now the idea is to go back to Noether's first theorem and to extract more information using this extra freedom we have. Now we have this freedom of we are able to change psi locally, so we can go back to Noether 1 and play, mess around with this fact. Go back to Noether 1, which is still valid. And extract more from it. So this, for this, I need a bit of notation. So remember, Noether was saying that dj is equal to delta xi phi of E. So I need to write this down a bit more explicitly. Hypothesis, but this is by no means very restrictive. depends. At most on first derivatives of psi. So you see, then we can write delta phi I equal A alpha I. So this is phi, d phi, etc. Here anything can happen, but then I have psi alpha plus b I a alpha. Again, this can depend on whatever I want, and there is a derivative. So it will have this general structure, right? This just by the hypothesis that it depends on your first variations. If you think of Maxwell theory, delta A is the derivative of psi. So we want this derivative. For diffeomorphism, the same. Delta G will be derivative of psi. So we want it. On the other hand, there can be linear terms, like in non-abelian Yang-Mills theory, there will be linear terms. This is the commutator with between psi and A. But so this covers the cases of interest. So I write this as a differential operator, I alpha acting on psi alpha. So these are just functions. This is a differential operator. Now, the notation I want to introduce is the following. Suppose I'm, what will I do? I will integrate these over M. So suppose I have, I'm interested in computing this quantity over here. This is nothing else than EI DI alpha psi alpha by my definition. What I want to do is to integrate by parts. So this, I say, if for all psi of compact support in interior of M, so they don't touch the boundary, that's what we want. This is equal to d alpha, so d dagger alpha I e I psi alpha. So this is the adjoint operator, and it looks like this. Oof. Maybe I call this B to avoid confusion. Okay, so it's just integrations by part. There's nothing else. But this is the notation I wanted to introduce. So it's a formally adjoint operator. It acts on the other guy of this L2 inner product. So now, Noether theorem. Says that if G rho is a local symmetry, the equations of motion are not all linearly independent. Because they satisfy the following off-shell constraint. So I should have chosen a new blackboard, but Okay, so I will now prove it. So if you don't see the formula from there, it will come up in a moment. But essentially, that this quantity over here should vanish. Should vanish off shell, of course, because on shell is trivial, because the equations of motion go to zero. So this is an off shell statement. So it's also saying us, you see, that we have less equations of motion than apparently degrees of freedom, because I's are the component of our field, but there are as many constraints as there are alpha indices. Remark, we have less equations of motion, which is the number of I indices, than, less minus the number of alpha indices than degrees of freedom, which is the number I. That does this make sense?
What,
yes.
What is the I minus alpha? Isn't it just alpha equation?
Well, we have alpha constraints, so we remove. So the number of equations of motion is the number of EI that we have minus the constraints among them. Yeah. So if we have no local symmetry, alpha is, there is no index alpha, and this is not there. So this is why. So the dynamics is underdetermined, and this is why we will have to identify histories related by a gauge symmetry, because to avoid this problem, we just say, oh, those that the mismatch in fact is just a mathematical artifact. Physically, all these possibilities are the same. So if I start with an initial condition, there are many solutions of the equations of motion with that initial condition, because I have less equations of motion than degrees of freedom. But all of those will be gauge related, and so physically equivalent. So this is the conclusion one can draw from this theorem. That's why it's so crucial. The proof is rather simple. I just write, it works like this. I say xi of compact support in interior of M. Then I say, so this is just zero, because by Stokes' theorem, there's nothing hitting the boundary. But this binotor one is delta xi phi I ei. But this, by that little manipulation, is the integral of xi I d dagger I alpha ei. So, well, I forgot to put the epsilons, the volume. Now, what is the last step? The last step is to say that this is true for every choice of xi. And here I'm using the fact that this is a local symmetry, so I can vary it locally. So the only way that this can be true for all xi's that depend locally on x is that the coefficient vanishes. So this is called the fundamental theorem of the calculus of variation sometimes, but it's just the usual thing that we do when we compute the equations of motion from the Lagrangian and so on. And of course, crucial is that this is a local symmetry. Otherwise, this argument would not go through. So it doesn't go through for killing symmetries. If we are restricted like before, that we computed what our our charge was, it was, sorry, Well, we will see also that the charges vanishes for a similar reason, but in any case, the point is that we need to use the locality of this. Okay. Now, the second consequence of this theorem. So you see, what we did is we have this equation. We have an equation like this, and we now we use the locality of Xi to deduce something about the E's. Now we can go back and deduce something about J again.
Or maybe, I don't know if this should be called
a proposition, maybe. Proposition. This proposition says that the charges of a gauge of a local symmetry must vanish. So for this, we need the hypothesis that we do not have boundaries, and that G rho is a local symmetry. Then we have that Q sigma oxi vanishes on shell. How do we do it? Well, we say consider let xi hat be the following. So we take our original symmetry parameter and we multiply by a function where f of x has these properties is equal to 1 in a, oh, so, as we consider the case, this kind of situation. Sorry, I should not draw the time-like boundary. This is this situation where there are no boundaries, of course. So we have two hypersurfaces that evolve into each other. And this is one in a Kohler neighborhood of sigma final, and is zero in a Kohler neighborhood of sigma in. This is just a real valued function, which is either 1 or 0 or anything in between that interpolates. So f does this. Maybe does that. So this is sigma initial, and this is sigma final. So it's flat here, flat there. So what we can do is to apply Noether first theorem we say that now this is an on-shell equality, this is Noether 1, but we do it for Xi hat, not for Xi. And then this becomes just the integral of Xi hat over the two surfaces. But this, of course, since this does know nothing about what happens far from the surface, is just Xi, and this is 0. And so we see that on shell, this guy must vanish. Since there is nothing special about my choice of surfaces, nor my choice of Xi, this is, we conclude. So so these are the two results of today. So with this hypothesis, of course,
we have this. This equation is really crucial for gauge theories. If you have seen BRST symmetry, you know that the BRST generator, the BRST operator kills the physical states. It's essentially just a rewriting of this equation. So because the BRST generator, what does it do? It generates gauge symmetries where we replace Xi by a ghost. And the generator of the gauge symmetries is Q. This is what we saw by Noether, well, by the last part of the recap. So this is telling us that the charge, the gauge charge of a state must vanish over a closed surface. So and these, if you it's not obvious, but it will end up being this statement about BRST. Remark, Q sigma xi equals 0 related to BRST S psi 0, where S, remember, S essentially is the generator with Xi replaced by the ghost. Okay, I'll stop here. In tutorial, we will apply, we will take Young-Mills and compute all these things in Young-Mills. So to get used to using these tools so they don't stay abstract, and we will see what exactly are these different pieces. I haven't had the time to say what happens to the Noether current itself. Finding results about the charge is easier than about the current, but the current will have, so I'm saying it because it will appear in the tutorial, will give a result similar to the one above, where you say, oh, the current should vanish on shell up to boundary terms. So that this is possible, because this must be possible for every sigma and every psi. The only way is that the current itself vanishes up to boundary terms. So that's roughly the idea. And the bulk term that vanishes on shell has a special meaning. So you will find it out in the tutorial. Okay, thanks.